This episode of the Potato Field with Spudman is brought to you by the 1-4 Group Incorporated, a leading supplier of innovative dormancy and sprout inhibiting products for the potato storage industry. They are dedicated to the continued development of new and improved post-harvest chemical applications through collaborative efforts with leading university researchers and private industry. Find out more at 1-4-group.com. Welcome to the Potato Field with Spudman. I'm your host, Zeke Jennings. Joining me today is Ben and Allison Sklarzik of Sklarzik Seed Farm in Northern Michigan. Ben, Allison, welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you guys doing in Northern Michigan today?
Well, it is a beautiful blue sky, sunny morning, so we're doing pretty good this morning.
Ben and Allison are pretty well known in the industry. They are very involved in the National Potato Council, so a lot of people already know them. But for people that don't, could you talk a little bit about what you guys do at Sklarzik Seed Farm? You guys are a tissue culture lab, which is pretty unique. Could you take us through what it is that you do?
Yeah, we're the very beginning of the potato process. So from the beginning of the process, we get varieties in from universities and other plant breeders throughout the US and around the world. And then Allison and her team in the tissue culture lab will increase those plants to the numbers we need to then place into our greenhouses. In the greenhouses, all the production is in hydroponics. So we're producing potatoes free from soil, allows us greater sterility within the production process, which then because of that process, we're then able to export outside of the United States a lot easier than we would be if we were in a traditional growing media production process. So we'll grow the potatoes. Takes 120 to 140 days to finish each crop cycle. We do 2 crop cycles in our greenhouses each year, and those get stored into large walk-in coolers and get shipped out to our customers that following year. So the potatoes that we're producing are about the size of a grape or a cherry tomato. They're 15 millimeter, 18 millimeter in size. So that's the process, a quick explanation on what we're doing. And for every mini tuber that leaves our facility, it'll be roughly 50,000 pounds of raw product going to factory or packing shed in a 4 or 5 year process.
Now, just to clarify, when it leaves your facility, is that considered generation one, or is it generation one the following year when it actually goes in the soil?
Depends on the state that it's going to. Some individuals, when it's planted, it's considered year one seed. Other states, it's considered nuclear. So there is kind of an anomaly within there's not a cohesiveness within all states as far as it. So it depends on which state, which province it goes to, depending on what class it's going to be when it goes into the field or when it gets sold after the first year in the field.
And now growing, I've actually been up to your lab. You guys hosted me last year, and I've seen firsthand the node process, and it's very precise, very intricate. But growing potatoes in a lab, in a greenhouse, is obviously different than soil. You've got your pitfalls in soil, you know, with pathogens and all of that stuff. What are the pitfalls in the greenhouse and in the lab? What are the things that you guys have to be concerned about when you're going through this process?
Well, on the lab side, we really need to be concerned with sterility. We cut inside clean air hoods, and the media looks like clear jello that we're cutting and putting the plants into. Also can become contaminated if you sneeze while you're cutting or if you accidentally bump it with your hand. So we're always really looking out for any kind of contamination. And luckily, that's really not an issue. We do have to keep the air conditioning filters and the HEPA filters clean, because in the spring when the pollen really kind of starts to evolve and become really heavy in the atmosphere, that can be a time when we could start to see some contamination. So really just staying on top of the cleanliness in the lab is really important.
Now the greenhouse itself, are you hinging on outdoor like temperature and sunlight? Is that why you do two cycles a year? Because you have to do it during the summer?
Yeah, we do two cycles a year for a couple reasons. One is the majority of our facility, we are relying on natural lighting for it. We have supplemental heat. We have cooling fans in the facility. Only about 10% of our facility has artificial grow lights. And one of the main reasons for that is not every variety responds positively to artificial light. Some varieties will actually have a negative response to artificial light. So learning and manipulating the varieties of their growth and development is one of the reasons for that. We also know that the potatoes ideally need that natural dormancy period. You need to have 90 to 120 days of natural dormancy for the product to perform its best when it's sent out to the customer, to the receiver. So if we were producing a third cycle, or if we produced year round, we would either have to store those mini tubers for an extended period of time, 16, 17 months, or we would have to do some ways to artificially enhance the dormancy, which can be hit or miss depending on the process in the year. So we like to have that natural dormancy. And also for the team that we have, to have a break in the cycle is nice, to not have plants in the facility year round. It's nice for the facility. It's nice for the facility to kind of go through that rest period and just be shut down in the winter and let everybody kind of regroup, recharge, and get ready to go at it again. Because we are harvesting potatoes from February through December, or March through December. So it's a long process for us. And, the guys in the field, granted, it's a little bit different environment when you're in a harvesting in the field situation, but, guys in the field will talk about, well, harvest went long this year. I started September and it went till November. Well, I kind of chuckle sometimes and said, well, you realize I started harvesting in March and I'm still harvesting now. Mm-hmm. So, we ask a lot of our team, but we've got a good team. So we're very thankful for the people we have.
And how many cultivars are you growing in a given year? And how do you go about choosing the different cultivars to grow? What drives your selection process?
I think right now we have somewhere between 130 and 140 different varieties that we're growing in the 2020 for 2021's crop. We actually don't pick any of those cultivars. Those are requested by customers, which specific lines they want us to grow. We will source those lines if they don't have a particular lab or university that they want us to get them from, but those are really specifically asked by the customer. Some have their own line selections they want us to grow for them, but otherwise we don't really pick any of those ourselves.
What would you say is the predominant end destination of the cultivars that you grow? Is it mostly chipping? Is it a collection of everything, processing, field? Do you have any idea of the approximate breakdown?
The largest percentage of our product goes to the chip market. Our recent growth has came in the process and the table market. And a lot of the reason for our heavy impact in the chip industry is just the position of Michigan, the state we're in. Michigan is a very heavy producer of chipping potatoes. So just kind of fit into there, as well as several of our larger customers that we've had historically for a number of years are on the chip producing side. So that's where a lot of our production has been. That volume has stayed pretty consistent over the past 5 to 10 years. It's maybe had small growth on the chip market. Our growth has came as we're bringing in processing and table stock customers working in those arenas. So more and more we are doing the processing and table varieties. It's made it fun for our team as well, because for years it was round white potatoes and only round white potatoes. And then some customers started to look at some colorful varieties, and we'd get an occasional red skin. So everybody was always intrigued by that. Well, now as we are looking at so many different colorful varieties and the yellows and the oblongs, and just as the growth has happened, it's opened up some opportunities to see the varieties from the beginning, which kind of is fun as well.
Kind of a fun challenge too. Round whites mostly store exactly the same, but a lot of the people on our team really like to be challenged. And all of these different varieties all store differently. Their root systems are all different. It's brought in some fun challenges for us to try to figure out as well.
Have you noticed any trends in requests from your customers as far as colors, shapes, or is it pretty much all over the place?
It's been pretty much all over the place. It's been a little bit trending towards the small potato market. We see a little bit increase in that with the small size potato, where people are looking at varieties that set heavier, for exploring that, as that seems to be a segment of the industry that has some growth and some opportunity behind it. And it looks like there's kind of a constant looking for, you know, a good yellow skin or yellow flesh. You know, Yukon Gold has been out there for years and years, and we still have it in a small capacity, but there's others that are looking for a newer and better yellow skin as well, it seems like.
Switching topics a little bit, your farm underwent a pretty big expansion over the last, 6 months or a year. Could you explain what that entailed and how it has changed your capabilities?
Yeah, it was a undertaking that when we started, Alice and I talked about it a number of times, number of evenings, a lot of dinners. We discussed whether we wanted to do it, whether we should do it, whether it was the right time to do it. And all those discussions came back to what is the best thing to do for the industry and what is the best thing to do for all of our customers in general. And that led us to where we are today, and that led us into that expansion process. Made it, as we progressed into the expansion as well, there was obviously some unforeseen challenges that came along. But what we decided to do was any kind of modification or new technology in the potato industry is now separated out into its own completely separated, isolated facility. So our original facility that we have is strictly conventional potatoes. Any kind of other technology that's looked at in the industry, that is now in its separate isolated facility that has its own team that works in that location, so we can have complete separation, because we recognized there is a sensitivity, especially in certain segments of the industry, greater sensitivity to different technologies that's out there. So wanted to make sure, again, getting back to what is best for our customers. And we had complete separation and isolation in our facility before this, but it was still under one roof. So we wanted to take the next step and have that complete separation, complete separate team. And, you know, it's gone a long way, and it's, you know, we've seen a very positive response from individuals we work with, from different customers and different segments of the industry, have had a very positive response for us and with us. And it definitely, you know, to build a new greenhouse, to replicate the facility we have in a smaller scale during the COVID time, definitely had some challenges along the way, logistical challenges. We were maybe 50% complete with the project when the shutdowns and everything started to happen. And being directly involved with the project myself, kind of having the oversight of the project, as soon as we recognized things were going to start to get a little bit different, we started making sure we had all materials on site in hands as quickly as we possibly could, so we wouldn't delay the process. And we're thankful both on the local contractors that we utilize, the specialty contractors we utilize, They've all did a great job pulling together and helping us get that project put together. And we just, again, it comes back to the team that we build around us has done a really good job with us this year, especially during this challenging and interesting year.
Yeah, it has been the wildest year, I think, of any of our lifetimes. You've talked. We're going to take just a quick break here for a message from our sponsor. Do you struggle with black spot or pressure bruise in your potato crop? The team at 1-4 Group has a solution for you. Their biocontrol 1-4 site has proven time and again to be the best sustainable option for delivering high quality potatoes. Incorporate 1-4 site into your existing storage program for unprecedented success. Learn more at 1-4group.com. And now back to the podcast. Several times about the team that you have there. You guys are actually the second largest employer in your community, correct?
Correct. Yes. Second only to the school system.
Yeah. Was that be Johannesburg, Lewiston?
Correct.
Yep. That's for those who don't know, northern lower Michigan, it's near Gaylord. I don't know if that helps anybody, but it's a very small rural community up there. But you guys have compiled a great team. How big is your staff now?
Right now we have 32 employees. They are very hardworking, great, friendly people. They have been wonderful working through the pandemic. We scaled back at the very beginning of kind of the shutdown, and they were, you know, they all were really good to work with. We really wanted to kind of keep a skeleton crew to kind of figure out what was happening in our community as far as coronavirus and whatnot. And they all have come back full force. They all are very willingly wearing masks all day, which in July and August, when it was 90 degrees outside and ruthlessly hot in that greenhouse, they really did an amazing job. We also, I'm sure, Zeke, as you're aware, AG was mandated if you had more than 20 employees, you had to have everyone COVID tested, and all new employees also tested before they could start work. Everyone just jumped right on board with that as well. The local health department was really great to work with. And, you know, it actually, we were worried about how that would go as we hired new staff this fall when the high school and college kids went back to school. But we actually found that a lot of the newer employees found that really reassuring that, you know, we could say at this point in time, no one here had coronavirus. And they could see that everyone here had really been taking steps to be conscious of what they were doing extracurricularly, and we were all really trying to be cautious about how we went about our daily lives outside of work. So we've been really pleased with our team, and so far so good.
Knock on wood there.
Yes, yes. Anything can change, but everyone's been trying really hard to be safe.
Yeah, and you guys, you know, we talked about your local community, but your tubers go all over the world. I've been to your facility, and you have a map there with like little tacks on it to countries all over the world. What is that like to sell product internationally? Are there any special like certification and documentation challenges that presents?
Yeah, it's definitely rewarding to look at the map, you know, and on the top of the map, it says, small town, you know, business with the worldwide impact. And we put it there a few years ago in our team's break room so that everybody would be reminded on a daily basis of the impact that we have within the potato industry around the world. It's been different, and each country has its own requirements. And as we've exported to these countries over a number of years, you learn, kind of build a file for each of those countries, and you're able to go back to the previous year's documents and recreate those with updated information and send them off. So myself and Scott, one of the guys on our team, oversee the majority of the international shipments. And that's probably one of the other anomalies with international shipments is we ship several of them in the fall. Here it is in October, and we just sent out two of our international shipments, which the two of them combined amount for about 10% of our production. and one of them is going down to the southern hemisphere. So that's why it is being shipped out at this point in time, because it's going into their springtime planting. And the other one is going overseas to a tropical environment where it's getting into their winter season, which is their cooler growing season. That's why those get sent out at this point in time. I have some challenges with them being shipped out at this point in time, because we're also busy in production. So we're harvesting our greenhouse crop, but then it also utilizes a big team to get those prepped. And one of these international shipments is when they do get shipped out, the receiver is, they do a very thorough inspection grading process of it. So we were able to utilize that information they give back to us as a checks and balance as well to help improve our shipping for the remaining portion of the crop. And we can take that back to our team and say, this is, you know, we use it for improving the processes.
A couple of years ago, one of our international shipments docked in Chicago before it left, and one of the pallets was damaged on a loading dock. So Scott and Frank, two of our managers, went down to Chicago, and thankfully we had extra product we could replace it with, but they got to see how pallets are moved in shipping docks, which is really eye-opening experience. So that was actually kind of a, it's a very unfortunate situation, but kind of a fun challenge too, that we got to kind of come up with an indestructible pallet. And so much as like tipping it off the loading dock here and seeing how much we could damage it to really build this indestructible pallet, you know, and shipping boxes and whatnot to ship overseas. So try to take the most with what we've been dealt and make it better.
Well, for years I've told our team, it's kind of what I've been taught. And I tell our team, I said, you make the most of a bad situation. There was a problem that happened. Well, why did it happen? And what can we learn from it? And that's what we try to instill in our team every day with every process. And like Allison said, we have an extremely robust shipping packaging process now that was learned and developed because of a bad situation. If it was a bad situation, don't dwell on it too long. Learn from it. You know, so it's been interesting. It adds some fun challenges. There's some fun, you know, some new potato stickers we get to add to our map almost annually. There's some in the Middle East that we're going to get to add this year as well. And it's kind of been in a whole ironic twist of things, as we can ship potatoes around the world, but yet there's some states, and, you know, it's easier for us to ship potatoes to foreign countries than it is to states within the United States in some cases.
I can guess which states those are, but we won't go into that. Allison, your story on the pallet reminded me of an experience I had with luggage, watching luggage handlers handle the luggages. And I think they were practicing, you know, like how far they could throw them. But to switch to the field, Sklarzik was not always a tissue culture lab. That was something Ben's parents, Don and Mary, started in the 90s. You guys used to grow field potatoes, but you do not anymore. But you do grow some outdoor crops. What else do you guys have going besides the indoor potato operation?
Yeah, so my senior year of college was the last crop of potatoes we grew in the field. So that was 2003 was the last crop of potatoes that we grew in the field. We still maintain the row crop operation, corn, wheat, soybeans, oats, for protection of what we're doing in the greenhouse operation. You know, aside to it is, I still enjoy getting out, I'm still being involved with production ag on the outside, still being able to enjoy spending time in the tractor seat. I like taking our son and daughter for rides and, you know, showing them that side of agriculture as well. So we can work that aspect. But the biggest reason that we maintained it was to make sure we knew what was going on in the environment around our facility so that we are then able to control that. We make sure that it maintains the lowest risk possible for everything that happens in the greenhouse, because we go through and we tell our team there's a lot of lives that depend on us providing a good, clean, consistent product year after year. And we want to make sure that we're doing everything in our power to do that.
As I mentioned earlier, you both are very involved, like with the National Potato Council and as well at the state level. In addition to in like your own county and just your own community, where does the passion, the willingness to put yourselves out there come from? Does that kind of stem from Ben's father, Don, who is still involved in the NPC and such? Why do you guys see the value in that?
I think both of our parents were always just very involved in the community and also in our lives growing up. And if you want to live in a really wonderful community, someone's got to step up and make that happen. And I think you get so much out of what you put in too. You know, Ben helps coach our daughter's Odyssey, the Mind team. I'm going to help coach this year. We've coached T-ball. We're in church committees, just the FSA committees. You learn so much and you meet so many really wonderful people. I think you just, it's kind of, you know, the giving and the volunteering. I think you almost get more back than what you give because you're helping make the community a better place.
Yeah, and I feel that same way that on the potato industry is the industry has given and provided so much to myself, to our family over the years. You know, I love to see the industry grow and thrive. It's been, you know, there's been challenging times throughout our lives and the industry is there. There's people and friends that you meet in the industry through different challenges that, you know, they do wonderful things. So it's, you know, it's ways that you can help pay back and give back. And, you know, it's fun to see the growth of everything happen.
I think that's something that is important to teach our kids too. Last year, it was November 1st. Our school district is quite smart that they have teacher in-service and professional development the day after Halloween. So they don't have to deal with all those sugared up kids. So our daughter was home from school that day and we'd had a really heavy snow Halloween night, which is not uncommon for up here. But our high school football team had made it to the playoffs and there was way too much snow on the field. So the athletic director and the football coach posted on Facebook asking for anyone to help come shovel the field. It was going to be a home football game that night. And, you know, the work's got to get done and someone's got to step up and do it. It's not going to, you know, get done by itself. So Morgan had big plans for her day off of school, but I made her put on her snowsuit and we went to shovel the football field. And other than the football team, nobody else really showed up. So there's the high school football team kind of shoveling their own football field. And she griped about having to go. But once we got there, she realized how fun it was, you know, to be involved and to see that you're making a difference. And as it turned out, one of our small tractors with a snowblower and turf tires ended up being the perfect fit. So for 2 weeks in a row, since it was too snowy to get in the field and harvest corn, Ben harvested snow from the football field. You know, but I think just teaching our kids that too, it's not something that naturally comes, I don't think, you know, to put yourself out there and go work on your day off of school or off of work. But, you know, we really had a good time once we got out there.
Speaking of, I mentioned Don already, who is a former NPC president. He's doing some work on seed certification survey project. Do you guys have any updates on what that's going? Because he spoke about that at Potato Expo back in January.
Yeah, I think it's something that's still progressing along. I think with the COVID and everything kind of changing, it's maybe slowed some processes down. And then also during the growing season, it kind of typically slows down a little bit just because both growers and inspection teams are obviously busy in the field, whether it's doing field inspection or now harvest point inspection. But, you know, it was kind of that survey project to try to put things together to see where every state's program is and how we can continue to work and help the potato industry as a whole for all of the United States.
Looking ahead, what do you think the biggest challenges are that's facing the industry right now and will be in the coming years for potato growers?
labor right now is our number one challenge. We have always utilized local labor. We've never gone into H2A. We've not had the need to do that. we've always been able to look at local labor force to work on that. But we are seeing right now there's a lot of businesses looking for work in our community. You know, every business in our small community has a help wanted sign out front right now, but there's just people not applying. You know, it's unfortunate that with some of the programs that it's making it harder for people to hire the teams that are needed. So right now that's probably our biggest challenge that we have. What's your thoughts, Allison?
Yeah, I'd say, I mean, especially the fall is always a difficult time for us because our high school and college students are going back to school. And so we do have the need to fill some open positions, which generally then can turn into year-long work. But especially with our expansion this year, we're very short-staffed right now. Ben and I pick several days a week or work in the conditioning room and the coolers, which makes it a little bit challenging sometimes for us to get some of our office work done. So our kids, I remember when I was little, going to work with my parents was fun. They were teachers, so we'd go root through their desks and find stickers and stamps and stuff. Well, I'm afraid our kids don't love looking forward to going to work with us as much, but I'd say labor for us right now is not a new thing, but it definitely is more challenging to find staff right now.
You know, not an industry standpoint, you know, I think, you know, the unknown of, you know, potential diseases as an industry, you know, there's been a number of them over the years that have taken shape or have come up, whether it was, you know, Dickia 5-6 years ago or other diseases over the past, you know, 10-20 years that come up. You know, those can always be challenges in the industry, and that's where, you know, continuing to make sure there's a good solid seed system right from the beginning, you know, it's a good insurance policy for growers to work on that. And I think as researchers continue to look at the negative impacts of the yield drags from some diseases that are out there, whether it's PBY or some of the other diseases, it may be more, you know, commercial growers may be more aware of these potential yield drags. So you know, I think that's a thing, is just continuing to make sure the potato has the best image in the industry as possible, and, you know, continues to be a have that good image as a good food source and good quality, you know, making sure that when the consumer goes to get their package of potatoes or whatever form it may be, that it's a good, consistent product that they're able to use and has good taste and good flavor for them.
Well, we've covered a lot of ground. That was everything that I had for you guys. Is there any closing thoughts that you'd like to share?
I think we're all just really blessed to even work in this industry together. The potato industry, I think, is just a really great, supportive industry, even though we all kind of could say we're competitors, just working together, I think, you know, makes the industry unique.
Yeah, that's, you know, the potato industry has created some really good friends and some really great opportunities for us and our family over the years. And, you know, we continue to look forward to all the adventures that we get to have with others in the industry. So it's fun to be part of.
Oh, you know what? One story I'd love to have you share before we go is, on that note, you talked about the camaraderie. Could you share with the listeners the story on Ben being at Potato Expo in Las Vegas? Allison was back home pregnant, I believe, with your first child.
Yes.
And she was not waiting, or there was kind of an emergency situation. Could you share that story?
Yeah, it was 2013, and I was 34 weeks pregnant with our firstborn, who turned out to be our daughter, Morgan. We didn't know what we were having at the time. And I had had a wonderful pregnancy the entire time, no complications, very easy. I always felt great. And I felt really uneasy about Ben going to the Potato Expo. And the Monday before he left, he was going to leave on Tuesday. And on Monday, I'd had kind of a concerning doctor's appointment, and my blood pressure was a little bit up. And some other risk factors had started to show up, and I really didn't want him to go. And he said, I've got to go, have to go. I was put on a temporary bed rest and had to go back to the lab twice for some other follow-up blood work. And well, Ben got on his airplane, and I was, you know, supposed to be home kind of on bed rest until we found out some more. So no one was really expecting to see me at work. And it was Wednesday night. And while Ben had been gone for 24 hours, my obstetrician called and said, well, you need to pack your bags. I'm waiting for you here at the hospital. We are going to have an ambulance transfer for you to take you to Traverse City, which is about an hour and a half away to a larger regional hospital. Said, you've got to have this baby right now. And it kind of sent me into shock because I still felt fine. And as it turns out, I had very severe onset preeclampsia. My blood pressure was 210 over 109 when I got in the ambulance. And I was at very high risk for seizure or stroke. So I called Ben and told him what was going on. And probably one of my favorite parts of the whole beginning of the story, he said, oh gosh, I gotta call you back. And he hung up on me. Come on, Ben. I'm going to Traverse City in an ambulance alone. You've got to get this together, you know. And what being a very logical, practical, level-headed man that he is, he knew he needed to go get his dad out of a meeting at the expo to find him a flight home so he could be on the phone with me. And it just, you know, flights home with being in Las Vegas and getting back to Traverse City, it was going to be, you know, 24 to 36 hours before he could be back. And we looked at a private charter, and whether we could afford it or not, I heard the price tag and said, no, I'm fine. I'll have this baby alone. Don't get a private flight home. And some other friends kind of jumped in and were looking at options. And Brian Kirschman, a grower from California, kind of heard what was going on and said, well, got my plane at the airport. Let's find you a pilot. And Brian lent Ben his plane and flew him overnight back to Traverse City. And they were able to get my blood pressure stabilized just enough that Ben made it in time for last minute C-section. And so now Morgan is our potato expo baby. So she gets to travel with us and her little brother Dane, usually to every expo. So it really makes it fun to spend time as a family. God definitely had his hand in that whole process.
Yeah, I think anybody that attends the meetings is familiar with Morgan and Dane, a couple of very cute kids. So
they're very good kids. Yeah, so.
Well, Ben, anything you'd like to close with?
I don't think so. It's been an enjoyable conversation.
Absolutely. You guys have been excellent. I really appreciate it. And I think our listeners will as well. Check out Sklarzik Seed Farm online. If you're not familiar with them, the website, I think, is pretty straightforward. SklarzikSeedFarm.com.
SSFSeedPotatoes.com.
All right. Glad I double checked. It wasn't as straightforward as I thought. But all right. I will let you guys go. Thanks so much. I'll go ahead and log off here. Thanks for listening, everybody. And thanks again to OneFort Group, our sponsor. Be sure to go check them out at onefortgroup.com. We'll see you next time.